Welcome everyone to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. So grateful to be with all of you as we join together to dive in to yet another section or two. We'll see what we get through tonight. Let's begin with a brief period of meditation. So I invite you to join me. Settling in. I know I've actually been on the go today. And whether you have been or if your day has been a little bit slower, allowing your eyes to close if you are able, and turning attention from that current of busyness, that current of distractions in the external world and even on the surface of our mind, turning within to something deeper. Maybe sensing or imagining your mind dropping deep into the center of your being. And remembering that we're all doing this together because it's this place within each of us that we all share. And where two or more are joined, the ego falls away. Connecting with your willingness to loose the world from all you thought it was. Connecting with your willingness to see differently. Connecting with your willingness to be used, to allow spirit to use your eyes, your hands, your words. And offering this willingness over to Holy Spirit. And just resting here for a few breaths. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you. Certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly and joyfully place Holy Spirit in charge. We can take a breath, a sigh of relief. We don't have to do it. We don't have to figure anything out. We can place the Holy Spirit in charge and just imagining that we're in a circle and we're all doing this together and the strength and the power in that. Placing Holy Spirit in charge. Taking a nice deep breath in and releasing that breath. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Again, welcome everyone. It's so good to see all of you. We are reading part 8 in the Manual for Teachers. If you have the CE, the purple cover, it is page 1596. How can perception of order of difficulty in healing be avoided? If you have the Foundation for Inner Peace edition with the blue cover, it is page 24, all the way back at the back of the book in the manual. It's also part 8. And so if you can just find your way, my Foundation for Inner Peace book that I use, even though I have a newer one, is my original book that my mom gave to me in 1997. And I have all these notes in the back from study groups from when I was attending with Paula live, when my mom and stepdad were facilitating all of these notes from, gosh, from a long time ago, 2003, 2002. It's fun. I haven't looked at them in a while. I might have to do that soon. I just caught a glimpse of them. Anyway, let's dive in. All right. So for anybody who's new to our group, we just read a paragraph or two at a time, and I'll share some reflections, and I open it up for your insights and your comments or questions. So let's dive in. How can perception of order of difficulty in healing be avoided? The belief in orders of difficulty is the basis for the world's perception. It rests on differences, on uneven background and shifting foreground, on unequal heights and diverse sizes, on varying degrees of darkness and light, and thousands of contrasts in which each thing seen competes with every other in order to be recognized. A larger object overshadows a smaller one. A brighter thing draws the attention from another with less intensity of appeal. And a more threatening idea, or one conceived of as more desirable by the world's standards, completely upsets the mental balance. What the body's eyes behold is only conflict. Look not to them for peace and understanding. I'll pause there. You know, I have to say, it's always funny when I read this. I got in late this evening, and so I read this only about an hour and a half ago, and I just sort of read right through it, and I was like, I don't think I'm going to have anything to say. And now reading it again, I have so many thoughts come up. So what stands out to me is just how much this is speaking to specialness, that it talks about differences and contrasts, and everything's unequal, and everything is competing with every other in order to be recognized. Like, how much of that is captured by this idea of specialness? Everything is competing with another. A larger object overshadows a smaller one. A brighter thing draws our attention. What our body's eyes behold is only conflict. Look not to them for peace and understanding. Now, the thought that comes up for me is that remembering that it's our job to repurpose everything, to bring everything to the Holy Spirit, to allow the Holy Spirit to repurpose it for us. So the Holy Spirit will use the contrast. The Holy Spirit will use the specialness. The Holy Spirit will use the differences and the diversity to teach us. My goodness, I've had like extreme lessons this summer, and have, it's been like extreme elation and extreme pain, and really, really getting this idea that the Holy Spirit teaches through contrast and will use, you know, the contrast of the ego to help lead us out of it. The other point that comes up for me is the last two sentences. What the body's eyes behold is only conflict. Look not to them for peace and understanding. In my own journey, feel that I've made the mistake in the past, and I needed to go through this phase. Like, I needed this to do this, I think, for my own journey, was to think that, okay, I can't look to the body's eyes for peace and understanding. So let me just turn away entirely from the world. Like, let me just not look. It's all not real. It's all an illusion. I'm not going to pay attention, not going to get involved. And what this says to me now, instead of that, is that, well, number one, if we're looking away from something because we think it's painful, obviously that's pointing to the fact that we believe in it. You know, we believe it's real. We can't look to our body's eyes for peace and understanding, but looking out and seeing whatever it is that we see becomes an opportunity to bring it to the Holy Spirit to have it repurposed. So I don't believe that A Course in Miracles is teaching us to live on a mountaintop. I believe it's a very unique curriculum, a very unique pathway, because it's teaching us how to be miracle workers in the world, like in the conflict, in whatever situations and whatever, you know, whatever situations are that we find ourselves in. So that's what comes up for me for paragraph one. Does anybody have anything you'd like to add? Any insights that come up for you? Roy. Hi, Roy.
Hi. So what comes up for me is the reason why we need to look at the world is because the world is showing us our programs.
Yes.
That really is the purpose of looking at the world. And the reason why we have an aversion to it is because we have programs that maybe we need to look at, you know, stuff that we need to let go. So people come into our lives so that we can set them free. And if I'm perceiving a problem out there, the problem is not really out there. The problem is in my thinking. So for me, this talks about, again, coming back to cause and effect. Because if we can see that the cause, it's really just mind training, right? Which essentially is parenting your inner child, because your inner child has no discernment about what is helpful and what is not helpful. And again, bearing on Corinne's point about contrast, is that we learn through contrast. We learn to see what's peaceful and what's not peaceful. And whenever there's a disturbance, it's always because there's an error in our thinking. And it's not because it's something out there. So really, it's just bringing everything back again to the mind, because it's only the mind that's causative. So whenever there's disturbance, it's essentially an invitation for problem solving, which really essentially is A Course in Miracles, right? It's problem solving. Because whenever there is a problem, we always tend to, the intellect always says, it's out there. It's my body doing this to me. It's someone screaming at me. It's someone being nasty at me. So again, it's just bring everything back again to within yourself, because it's what you see with your body's eyes and what you feel with your hands and how you experience the world is only a symptom and an effect of what you're thinking. So again, it's bring everything back to a decision in your mind. And you have to be actually quite relentless with this, because the tendency is like, oh, it's something outside of me and I have no control over it. And that's really what makes us unhappy. So that's really how I see this paragraph.
Thank you, Roy. I feel like that was spot on. And you used the word relentless. Right before you said that word, I wrote down the word responsibility, and I think of it as like radical responsibility. It's like relentless responsibility. Like everything we see is coming from here, and I don't understand how. I don't get it. I really don't get it, but I'm willing to still take responsibility for it, and I'm willing to be taught. And that relentless responsibility, that radical responsibility, has just been something that's been very, very helpful to me. To be responsible for what it is that I see, even if I don't understand how, even if it's a painful situation and I have no idea how it's coming from my mind, I'm still willing. And that's it. That's that willingness that we're asked to have. So thank you, Roy. Did you put your hand back up?
Yes, because I wanted to add to your point about responsibility. Because when I first heard responsibility many years ago, you know, it induced a deep sense of guilt. So I just wanted to clarify to everyone that by taking responsibility, it's not guilt. Because the tendency is, oh, if I see war out there, then I'm responsible for the war. No, you're responsible for your perception of the war. You're responsible for your belief in conflict. That's what needs to be released. And because it's simply an error, and it's not something that it's simply an error. So forgiveness is the miracle, right? Miracle is the responsibility is the acceptance of the atonement. That's what we're told repeatedly. And what is the atonement, but accept the correction for the error. which means we are not guilty. Yay!
Yay! Oh, thank you, Roy. That was awesome. That was awesome. And I'm so glad you brought that up about guilt, because that is one of those, again, the course is saying this is all coming from our unconscious guilt and our unconscious fear, but like guilt is at the core. And so if we can be aware of that, even if it's a fleeting sense of guilt, if we can, instead of letting it go hidden again, that moment that we notice that guilt just come up, that moment, if we just catch it, you know, if we notice it, we say, oh, Holy Spirit, I'm feeling guilty. Like, here you go, you know, and not let it go hidden again. The course is about undoing guilt, not increasing it. So if we notice it, that's just the ego trying to, you know, distract us and bring our attention elsewhere. So thank you for that, Roy. Awesome points. Michelle.
Hi, sorry, I just realized I have some music on here. Pause that. Okay, sorry. I just wanted to read that little quote that I mentioned from last week about the doubt and guilt, but there's just a little piece, a few sentences above, that has a really good "for you" from the Holy Spirit, and it talks about contrast. So I'll just read, it'll just be a few sentences, and I'll just read up to what Dave added last week. But I just wanted to just add to what Roy had said and what you had said about the guilt. And what I've been trying to do over the last few days, or what I've been noticing, is that when anxiety comes up or fear comes up, a fear thought or whatever it is, I'm like, oh, okay, so this is distracting me. This is trying to serve to distract me from the separation guilt, from seeing the separation guilt so that it can be healed. And that's what I've been doing over the last few days. And it seems to kind of, it's like, oh, okay. So this anxiety is the guilt, and this fear thought, okay, trying to distract me. This is just trying to distract me from seeing the guilt so I can look at it with the Holy Spirit and it can be healed.
That's so powerful, Michelle. I have something I want to say, but I want you to read.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. So I'll just read the quote. So I'll just start at the contrast. So it's in that chapter 13, the peace of heaven. Okay. And it is talking about the contrast between heaven and the darkness. And it says, the Holy Spirit points quietly to the contrast, knowing that you will finally let him judge the difference for you, allowing him to demonstrate which must be true. He has perfect faith in your final judgment because he knows that he will make it for you. To doubt this would be to doubt that his mission will be fulfilled. How is this possible when his mission is of God? You, whose mind is darkened by doubt and guilt, remember this. God gave the Holy Spirit to you and gave him the mission to remove all doubt and every trace of guilt that his dear son has laid upon himself. It is impossible that this mission fail.
I just got goosebumps.
I love that.
I love that too. Thank you. That was chapter 13. What?
Chapter 13. And it's the peace of heaven. It's page 267 in the FIP edition.
Okay, cool. Thank you for that. That's awesome. You know, Michelle, I just wanted to respond, and I don't honestly remember if maybe I did share this with you all some weeks ago, but I call it my creme brulee story, where we all know creme brulee. It's like that yummy custard, and there's the sugar on top that's like melted, and so it's, you can crack it with your fork. I had an experience of the anxiety, like recognizing that my issues have never been about anxiety. It's been about guilt. The guilt cracked through like the anxiety, like creme brulee. And so what you just said really speaks to me. Everything that you just said, and that quote was perfect. So thank you, Michelle. That was awesome. That was awesome. I love how you said, this is distracting me from seeing the separation guilt. It's and that's what it is. That is absolutely what it is. So good. Thank you. Anyone else? We've only read one paragraph so far. We're almost halfway through. How about let's read paragraph number two? Let's go for it. Illusions are always illusions of differences. How could it be otherwise? By definition, an illusion is an attempt to make something real that is regarded as of major importance, but is recognized as being untrue. The mind therefore seeks to make it true out of its intensity of desire to have it for itself. Illusions are travesties of creation, attempts to bring truth to lies. Finding truth unacceptable, the mind revolts against truth and gives itself an illusion of victory. Finding health a burden, it retreats into feverish dreams. And in these dreams, the mind is separate, different from other minds, with different interests of its own, and able to gratify its needs at the expense of others. So illusions are always illusions of differences. This sentence number 6 really stands out to me. Finding truth unacceptable, the mind revolts against truth and gives itself an illusion of victory. Finding health a burden, it retreats into feverish dreams. I feel like on some level I can relate to experiencing this all the time, because it's that, how do I say this? It's that constant desire to want to go back to having like a pretty picture, like, you know, like, oh, I'll be okay if the external circumstances are okay. It's the retreat into wanting to be a body. It's the small little subtle feelings of like not wanting to trust, not wanting to let go of, wanting to stay in control, really, you know, on some level thinking that I'm going to steer the ship better than the Holy Spirit. And there's a course teacher, her name is Susan Dugan. Back when we were doing the Miracle Share conferences years ago, in one of her sessions, I remember her saying something to the effect of that when things would kick up, she would just say to herself, I'm just being afraid of love again. Like, I'm just retreating from love. I've just grown afraid of love again. And whether it's a retreat into anxiety or some other form of fear or sickness or whatever it is, that's really all it is. We've just become afraid of love again. We've become afraid of God on some level. And so we retreat a bit, and it's not something that we need to feel guilty over. This is where the happy learner cannot feel guilty about learning. We can see that this is just what's happening, and we can hold it lightly and look at it with the Holy Spirit for that repurposing. That's all I have to say. Anybody want to add anything to that second paragraph? Let's go for paragraph number 3. Where do all these differences come from? Certainly, they seem to be in the world outside. Yet it is surely the mind that judges what the eyes behold. It is the mind that interprets the eyes' messages and gives them meaning. And this meaning does not exist in the world outside at all. What is seen as, quote, reality is simply what the mind prefers. Its hierarchy of values is projected outward, and it sends the body's eyes to find it. The body's eyes will never see except through differences. Yet it is not the messages they bring on which perception rests. Only the mind evaluates their messages. So only the mind is responsible for seeing. It alone decides whether what is seen is real or illusory, desirable or undesirable, pleasurable or painful. So again, the world, the body, it's all neutral. And the body will, it says the body's eyes. Now, when the Course says, this is something I picked up from Earl Purdy, if we all know Earl, I remember him saying once, when the Course says always or never, it means it. So like, pay attention when you see those words, never. The body's eyes will never see except through differences. It's our perception that starts to change that affects how we interpret, how we take in the differences that the body's eyes will report. Because remember, the body under the ego's reign is a device for reporting separation. Repurposed, it becomes a communication device, but under the ego's reign, it's a separation device. So the body's eyes will never see except through differences. Now, this paragraph where it talks about how, like, you know, there's no meaning out there. It's the mind that's interpreting the messages. It's always the mind that is responsible for seeing. It made me think, I remember hearing a story, and I don't know where this happened or what tribe, but I remember learning about a native culture that because they didn't have a concept of like ships, that they couldn't actually even see them at first out on the horizon. Like there wasn't, they didn't have a concept for a ship like that. And so it took some time to actually be able to see it. And it also, I was listening to this really cool podcast about, it was about UFOs and aliens. And the person who's actually a professor of religion, her book was about like religion and like UFOs, aliens coming together, like just where they intersect in terms of the topic. She said that if aliens were here, they'd be so foreign to us. We could be looking at them right now and have no idea. Like we have no concept for that level of abstraction and we wouldn't even perceive it. And so that those are examples to me of what this is speaking to, that it's the mind that is evaluating what the body's eyes are reporting. So in the mind, it's what judges what the eyes behold. It interprets the eyes' messages, gives them meaning. And yeah, we'll be talking about this a little bit more in the next paragraph. So any insights or comments, questions so far coming up for anyone? Andrea, I had a feeling that you were going to speak soon.
Did I have that look on my face?
maybe. Or I just got the vibe.
I've had a thought that's been coming up the whole time, and I keep sort of asking Holy Spirit, should I share it? Should I not? Should I share it?
I've been waiting.
It hasn't been clear, but just now, what was coming forward for me is I've been in doing the daily lessons. I've been kind of playing with the idea that the world we see with the body's eyes is kind of like, and our bodies themselves, like who we think we are in the physical world, is kind of like like a hologram or like an avatar in a VR, a virtual reality game, and that everybody else is avatars in a virtual reality game also. And their real self, who they really are, their truth is pure love and light, just like we are. And in that way, we're all connected to one another, but we're seeing each other as avatars in our game, and they're seeing us as avatars in their game. And it's because of the COVID stuff. Like I find myself, you know, being kind of afraid of being near people who aren't vaccinated, who might have the Delta variant. And then I keep coming back. It's like, no, nothing anyone else does can hurt me, like the real me. Mm. They, and their avatar can't hurt my avatar, except in mentally, you know, just in perception. Mm-hmm. The truth of who they are would never hurt me. The truth of who they are would only extend love and forgiveness and absolute, you know, pure seeing each other in oneness. And so there's no way to really be hurt. I mean, the avatar can think it's hurt, mm-hmm. but now I've kind of lost track of where I was going with this, but I guess the real point of it is that the true self cannot hurt anyone. The true self can only extend love. Mm-hmm. And it's only that the avatars that can kind of convince each other that they're hurting one another, mm-hmm. Which isn't really real. So when, like Roy said, if we're relentless in coming back to that it's only perception, that we can not get caught up in the belief that we've been hurt, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which then distracts us from the truth of who we really are and the truth of who the other people really are. Mm. I'm sorry if that was confusing, but.
No, that was great, Andrea. I'm really glad that you shared it. And, you know, just one of the things too, that came up for me in the reading that you just mentioned and it came back was also like the collective nature. Like there's the, you know, we're walking around as an avatar and, you know, seeing what we're seeing, but there's like a collective piece happening too, that's sort of co-created with, you know, different aspects of the same mind, all these different seeming avatars walking around, and you're getting some amens in the chat. So
yeah, we're extras in other loving beings' plays also, but you know.
That's great. That's so true. I saw Roy's hand go up. Roy, did you have something to add to that point?
Yeah, interestingly, Andrea, that's also been what's been going on for me, is this idea of attack, you know, and this idea of being hurt. And then the course is very, very clear about, you know, nothing can hurt you unless you give it the power to, which again brings everything back to a decision in your mind. So only your mind, only consciousness is causative. But we are so addicted to controlling, to manipulating, to thinking it's something out there, to blaming others, to finding causation and form, that we do actually have to, you know, I really, really see this as mind training, you know, because it's so easy to fall into the trap that COVID is responsible for my sense of being upset, or someone not wearing a mask. Now, whether they wear a mask or not has actually no effect on me. If I'm actually willing to do the work, that I'm never upset with the reason I think. I'm always upset because I think that there is some level of causation out there that I'm not in control of. Now, that's difficult because when you're coming from a place of being split and you're so rooted in this idea that I'm an isolated person separate from everyone else, it takes an enormous amount of energy and courage to say, it's just me. And everything outside is a reflection of me. It takes a lot of courage and fortitude and a lot of soul searching and a lot of, like, if you're upset, you must actually, you know, sit with yourself and parent your mind with the Course in Miracles teachings, because it really essentially is trying to get your intellect to be convinced that there is no cause out there, that everything is an effect of my thinking. And if my thinking is erroneous, then I can only see error. But the Course again is saying the only true power of denial is to deny that error can hurt you. So yes, we have to look at the error. We have to look at the guilt. We have to look at the fear, and we have to actually feel the separation. But also with that knowledge and that faith in the back of your head that, yes, I am Christ consciousness and that no error can hurt me. So again, coming back again to, you know, just learning to just be with yourself and learning to switch your thought system, because we have two thought systems, right? Because our mind has splintered. That's what the Course tells us. The thought system of fear, which is always causation out there. And then the thought system of love, which is there is only oneness. And there, since everything is one, there's no one part to judge the other part. So that's really all I have to say.
Thank you, Roy. Cheryl, I saw your hand go up.
Hello, can you hear
me? Hi, yes.
Okay. So I was thinking about how I'm sure everybody's had the experience where sometime in your life this happened, and it's happened many times since, where you go, oh, I thought everybody was like this, fill in the blank. And really, you were just seeing that perception because of your upbringing. And then I was thinking about how all of our upbringing in childhood and, you know, heritage, family, just experiences, how that formed our focus in the way that we see the differences and the illusions. And so here's another thing that we all experience at some point, is we usually are looking at somebody else and we go, they don't even see it. You know, like you can say it about someone else, but you don't realize that it's you too. They can't see somebody else's. And you like going, oh my God, they lived this certain kind of life that they can't even see it. Fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's, you know, like for myself, I'll use myself for an example. I grew up like really poor and struggling, you know, rough childhood. And then I would see people that I went to school with, they had like really privileged lives. And things would come up where I'd go, they don't even see fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like making me think about how you were just talking about the Indian tribe. We actually learned that in school or something, with it, where when the Mayflower was coming to America and the Native Americans that were here, they only saw the ripples in the water.
Mm.
They saw the waves, and that's what made them look out there and go, why is the water moving like that? That's mm-hmm. so odd. And then all of a sudden they saw the ships,
hmm.
you know, but first it was just the water, because really we're formed in childhood and early adulthood to see what our experiences told us, because uh-huh. as a child, we're thinking, how am I going to get my food? How am I going to get my love? How am I going to get my protection? The things that a child needs, you know? And so that's what our focus is.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we're growing up, we're kind of stuck on that same thing. How am I going to get my money? How am I going to get my partner? You know, how am I going to get my big house? And so it's like driving all of us, rather than being taught from an early age to rely on the Holy Spirit, rely on God, to know that we're cared for, to listen to the guidance. Imagine what a different life that would form in a child to be taught that, mm-hmm. and just to calm that anxiety of, no, you don't have to worry about where your next meal is coming from, even if you're poor, or where, you know, if someone loves you because your parents aren't treating you lovingly, because the Father in heaven loves you and is taking care of you. So I don't know, I just makes my mind go and go and go and think about how children could be taught these things and it would completely change what they see, the differences.
Cheryl,
I don't know if any of that made sense.
It made perfect sense.
My ramblings.
It made perfect sense. I'm so glad you did it, because I actually, you're giving us a perfect segue into the next paragraph, because I wanted to respond to something you said, and I was like, oh wait, it's in the next paragraph. So I'm going to read the next paragraph and then say what I was going to say based on what you just shared. So let's look at paragraph number 4. It is in the sorting out and categorizing activities of the mind that errors in perception enter. And it is here corrections must be made. The mind classifies what the body's eyes bring to it according to its preconceived values, judging where each sense datum fits best. What basis could be faultier than this? Unrecognized by itself, it has itself asked to be given what will fit into these categories. And having done so, it concludes the categories must be true. On this, the judgment of all differences rests, because it is on this the judgments of the world depend. Can this confused and senseless reasoning be depended on for anything? So Cheryl, what you just said that brought up an idea for me that is reflected in this paragraph is the idea that what our experience tells us, you know, we're fitting it into these preconceived categories, and then that affirms that our categories must be real, that they must be valid. It's a closed loop. And so that's like, yeah, the closed loop of the ego. We have these preconceived categories, the sense datum comes in, it fits into our categories. Oh yes, our categories must be real, and the categories can be, you know, whatever faulty. We all know perception is faulty. All of our perception is faulty. There's, you know, cognitive psychology has data showing how unstable our perception is. And so, yeah, just that idea of the closed loop came up. And like you're saying, the difference being that if we learned at a young age how to rely on the Holy Spirit, how to turn to that inner guidance and lead from that place, that's like that opening in the closed loop that then, in a sense, collapses that loop, or let's say repurposes that loop. That's when we start following the Holy Spirit's guidance rather than, you know, these preconceived ideas that are all made up by the ego. So Cheryl, I don't know if what I just said makes sense to you based on what you just said, but that's what came up for me.
Yeah. And how, I'm going to just also add that if we learned to rely on that as being the reality rather than all this other perception commotion going on that isn't, you know, because like it took me so many years to actually go, wait a minute, I'm perceiving life this way because of where I came from and how I was able to switch that over and say to myself, that's not always true. What's true is what I'm getting from the guidance from the Holy Spirit.
Right. Yeah. That's everything. And thank goodness we have this pathway to teach this to us now as adults. If we, you know, we all had this as a kid and have learned the ways of the world and perhaps, you know, forgotten that guidance, that connection with Holy Spirit to some degree, but it's never gone away. It's always been there. And thank goodness we have this, you know, now to bring us back. So thank you for that, Cheryl. I appreciate every word that you just shared. I also just wanted to respond. We had a couple of comments about COVID. I just wanted to say, my friend, and most of you know Freedom Cartwright, I believe these were her words in a private conversation, just about how we're all being squeezed. She used the word squeezed, and I so feel that with the pandemic, with the intensity. I mean, I don't know about all of you, but I've had layers of multiple super intense stressors in the past few months, like multiple layers. And I feel that we are all being squeezed to the point, like we can't stay comfortable here. Like we can easily get comfortable when our outside environment seems peaceful and we're being shaken up. We're all in a period of, it's like a collective period of undoing to some degree where we're being squeezed into saying there's gotta be another way. You know, there's gotta be another way because in so many areas of the world, it's just deadlocked and, you know, dead ends. And so I don't think that there's, as much as I am so ready for COVID to go away, I don't think there's any mistake, you know, at the same time that it's here, because it's squeezing every single one of us to the point that we have to look at what is happening in our minds and what our fears are that perhaps have been hidden because things have seemed okay on the outside. So it's a grand opportunity when things are this intense, because it is just an opportunity. We're not normally, well, we're all uncomfortable to some degree, like, you know, with whatever it is that we're facing, but this has, you know, been very unique. Paula.
It's the greatest learning period.
Yes.
It really and truly is. And I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
truly is.
I'm with you. Yes. I'm with you wholeheartedly. Let's, since it's 8:45, Steve, you go, and then we'll read another paragraph.
Just a quick comment on that is that I take comfort in knowing that I chose to be here, and we all chose to be here at this point in time to participate in what's going on. And that gives us the perfect opportunity to bring our light to any difficult situation.
Yeah.
You know, anything to anybody and everybody.
Yeah.
I like to use the term of trying to practice forgiveness in all my affairs. Mm-hmm. And just another little quick note on what you were all talking earlier about compartmentalizing, how the ego compartmentalizes all that stuff. And that's kind of our default we go to. Mm-hmm. I recognize that as bringing the past into the present, you know, and that those boxes, you know, the ego's building these boxes, you know, second by second by second, you know, so, you know, I could drive around the corner and somebody in a particular, you know, a purple and yellow car can cut me off. And now I'm programmed to think that every purple and yellow car is going to be some idiot that's going to cut me off, you know? So it's just crazy. And, you know, it's just relentless vigilance, you know, of keeping Holy Spirit, you know, right next to us. And, being wrapped in those arms and that love. So yeah, this is a wonderful time to be here. I'm grateful. Thanks.
Steve, I'm grateful for your words, because that's just a reminder that I needed to hear, that like there is no mistake that all of us are here in this time, in our particular town, in our particular family, in our particular country. Like there is no mistake. And I love how you just called it relentless vigilance. Like that is what is being called for right now. It's what is being called for. We have no slack. Like, it's like, okay, you learn. I mean, at least in my experience, you learn that lesson. Here's another one. And it's like, we're learning lifetimes of lessons in 3 days. Yeah. At least that's how it's been feeling for me.
And all the garbage that we had in previous lives is all coming to the surface too. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
This is an incredible time.
Yeah, it is.
Clear all that
time.
Stuff out.
So. Yeah, thank goodness.
Let's have fun with it.
Let's be happy learners. I love your, I love that. Thank you for that, Steve. That's really, really helpful. John, did I just see jazz hands? I did. Awesome. Thank you. Okay, let's read paragraph 5. We have 2 paragraphs left. There can be no order of difficulty in healing, merely because all sickness is illusion. Is it harder to dispel the belief of the insane in a larger hallucination as opposed to a smaller one? Will he agree more quickly to the unreality of a softer voice he hears than to that of a louder one? Will he dismiss more easily a whispered demand to kill than a shout? And does the number of pitchforks the devils he sees carrying affect their credibility in his perception? His mind has categorized them as real, and so they are real to him. When he realizes they are all illusions, they will disappear. And so it is with healing. The properties of illusions which seem to make them different are really irrelevant, for their properties are as illusory as they are. To me, the sentence that really stands out in this paragraph is that his mind has categorized. So all of these unreal things, if we're hearing voices, whether it's a soft voice or a loud voice, whether there's a shout to kill or a whisper, if our mind categorizes them as real, which it has, then they are real to us. So that's where, again, going back to the idea of like, oh, the world isn't real, we're not bodies. Those are lovely words that can be helpful at times to remind us of the truth. And in my experience, a lot of times they are just words, because I have made it real for myself. My mind has categorized them as real. My mind has categorized COVID as real, whatever it is. And so they are real to him. When he realizes they're all illusions, they will disappear. Now, I can't self-correct. I cannot do the Holy Spirit's job and just say, oh, COVID's just an illusion. I have already made it real for myself. And so I need the Holy Spirit. This is where, again, the Holy Spirit is everything. We are not asked to do the Holy Spirit's job. We have a very small part. And that is, as you know, because with putting that list of all the things that the Holy Spirit does for us, and we found one a couple of weeks ago, the Holy Spirit gives gifts for us and receives the gifts of God for us. We don't even know how to like do that. So we're asked to do so very little. This is all about learning to trust and rely on the Holy Spirit in every single thing that we do. And as we do that, we have experiences that teach us that what we've made real for us is not actually real. We have an experience of the truth behind the form, as if I remember my stepdad talking one time about having an experience of like cardboard cutouts. And I've heard other people say that before too. And I've even sensed, not quite like that, but in a different sort of way, of just sensing, like, I shared this with you all a few weeks ago, that like loving a tree so much, because I'm loving not the form, but that which is like behind it, like sensing something behind the form. And it's through those types of experiences that we come to experientially recognize illusions as illusions. So we don't intellectually do this on our own. We might need to remind ourselves of those nice sounding words, those truth words from time to time, but that's not how we get there. Because if we're trying to get there just through the words, that's like a bypass. We have to learn. We have to literally learn and experientially have that knowing. Let's read the final paragraph and then we'll see. Oh, Cheryl, do you want to speak now, make it quick, or do you want to save it until after?
I'll make it super quick.
Okay.
Somebody in the group said a couple weeks ago about if you say something isn't real, that it's just like saying that it's real because you're like in this denial thing. And I think there's something about it in the course where Jesus talks about that. And that is so true, because like, if you don't think something's real and you're not denying it, but you're just, I don't know, for example, real quick with COVID, I was like super paranoid about getting it. And I was making it super real for myself. It was like part of my everyday thoughts and everything. And then I was just like, why am I focused on this so much? And so I stopped thinking about it. And seriously, sometimes I even forget about it. And then I'm going out to the store or something. I'm like, oh my God, I forgot that this is a thing. Because I'm not saying, oh, COVID's not real. I'm not like a denier, but mm-hmm. I'm not even thinking about it. It's mm-hmm. like not even... And so then it doesn't become, then it's like, it's not real anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the way that works, is that you don't say something's not real. You just don't focus on it.
Right. It's not in your experience. It's not in your
yeah
world. Yeah. Your consciousness. Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Final paragraph. The body's eyes will continue to see differences. But the mind, which has let itself be healed, will no longer acknowledge them. There will be those who seem to be, quote, sicker than others, and the body's eyes will report their changed appearance as before. But the mind will put them all in one category. They are unreal. This is the gift of its teacher. The understanding that only two categories, real or unreal, the understanding that only two categories are meaningful in sorting out the messages the mind receives from what appears to be the outside world, and of these two, but one is real. Just as reality is wholly real, apart from size and shape and time and place, for differences cannot exist within it, so too are illusions without distinctions. The one answer to sickness of any kind is healing. The one answer to all illusions is truth. I thought this was significant, this first sentence. The body's eyes will continue to see differences. So your eyeballs are still reporting form, but it's the mind that sees them differently. It's the mind that doesn't acknowledge them. And that's not a... Again, it's so, I feel like there's such a risk there for me as Corinne to read that sentence and to say, oh, I just need to not acknowledge differences. And that's not, that is not my experience. And I don't think that is what is saying. It's something behind Corinne that doesn't acknowledge them. It's not Corinne deciding to not acknowledge, because I feel like, I know I've been cruel with A Course in Miracles teachings before, and I'm sure I know others have also. I mean, I feel like I see it in some Facebook groups a lot, that we use these teachings to be like, oh, that's not real, you know, to not be compassionate, to not necessarily be kind. And so it's something behind Corinne that doesn't acknowledge the differences. It's not me doing it. It's something behind me. And we, again, it's this experiential learning that starts to teach us that this form, what we see, the different forms of sickness, that it's not real. It comes experientially. Paula.
It's the observer. It's the observer. And mm-hmm. and that's when I can remember to just tune into the observer. I had an experience tonight with my daughter. She was really testing me. And I didn't want to get into it. I really didn't. She's wonderful. She's going through a hard time right now. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into that. So switching into the observer, mm-hmm. save the day. Mm-hmm. Just observing it and not judging it, nothing. It's fine. That's what you're talking about.
Thank you, Paula. Yeah. You know, it's funny, the word observer, I need like loving observer, like personally, yes. Like I want to look like just to be clear that it's not like a, I don't know, there's a loving element to that observer.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's exactly where I had to go with it. Mm-hmm. Just mm-hmm. come from, just understand, just love her right now. Mm-hmm. It's a hard time. Mm-hmm. It's what we've been talking about all evening.
Yeah.
And I don't like it any better than she does.
Yeah.
You know, but the growth that comes from this is tremendous. And it's messy.
Yeah. Oh, is it messy? Oh, my goodness. Yes, it's messy. It's so messy. But that's where I'm so grateful for all of you. Like, again, that image of just putting our hands together and holding hands, and that we're going through it together. We're finding our way, you know, step by step. And so I'm in a lot of appreciation for that. Fellow miracle workers, fellow mighty companions. Awesome. Any final comments or questions? Roy.
You know, if you have insight into why you suffer, you also understand why everyone else is suffering. Mm. We are suffering because we are wounded, mm-hmm. right? And it's, you know, it's coming back again to Cheryl, and it's decisions that we make as a child and the lens through which we experience that, right? So for me, it doesn't matter what the severity of the trauma is when you're young, you get hit with the tsunami of emotions. And it's the first time that you experience loss of love, loss of acceptance. You feel unsafe, you feel rejected, you feel abandoned. And then you make a decision, there is something wrong with me. And because you believe that, you will look for evidence in the world to support that. That is perception. Perception is the consequence of what you're looking as a result of the belief that you're holding on to. So when that becomes conscious, then there is room for healing, there's room for transformation. And that cannot come if you are entangled with the belief. You must be, as what Paula says, be the witness and the observer of the program. Right. So it's, again, the Holy Spirit's perspective, which is really a construct of who and what we are as we move up to mind training. Advanced mind training is forgiveness is still and quiet and looks on and judges not, because we're so addicted to reacting. And like what Steve said, we're always reacting from the past. We're always categorizing. And the reason why we categorize is because we feel we need to protect ourselves. And we need to protect ourselves because we are fearful of feeling the fear of not being loved again. We didn't know how to process that as a child. So we didn't have the ability and awareness when we were children to see, oh, you know, mom and dad may have done that because they were hurt, or maybe they were going through a hard time and I made a decision about myself that was totally untrue. So again, we don't see the same world. We don't see COVID as the same thing, right? And again, coming back again to the lesson, I've given everything the meaning it has for me. So for me, when I look at COVID, I would write out everything I would think about COVID. I would like get on my computer and type, what does COVID mean to me? COVID means I'm fearful of getting sick. Fear, mm-hmm. anxiety. COVID is something outside of me, not within my control. Fear, anxiety, right? Then I would go through all the beliefs and they all trace back to a identity, right? Because remember, we did those different levels of mind, desire, and then thought, feeling, and then perception. So perception, there's no point tinkering with the screen. There's no point talking to the projection called COVID. It's the meaning that I'm giving to it that I need to examine. And so that's the lesson. That's the invitation to go within and see it's just me, not in a selfish way, but really just saying like, if I'm healed and my perception is healed, everyone is healed. If I'm willing to go back to zero, everyone goes back to zero. It works like that because we are not disconnected droplets in the sea. We're all drops, or we are all individual expressions of the one source.
Yes, we are. Thank you, Roy. Cheryl, I see your hands.
I just want to say that Roy is so much better at explaining my thoughts than I am. Thanks, Roy.
Thank you, Roy. And Cheryl, you do a wonderful job. So thank you. Big hugs to all of you. Thank you so much for being here and sharing in this space. I love you all. Have a wonderful week, and I'll see you on Sunday in 7 days. Bye, everyone. Good night.
Bye. Love you.
Good night. Thank you. Bye-bye.